Hi, I'm Peter Sagal. Welcome to the podcast edition of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. Enjoy.
From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. We've got a great show for you today. Brad Bird, the filmmaker behind The Iron Giant and The Incredibles and Ratatouille, he's going to be joining us to play Not My Job. He's already won an Oscar. He might get another one this year. And that's, you know, okay, I guess, if you don't mind sharing something with Mira Sorvino. But if you want a prize you really have to earn, you know what to do. Give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Anthony from Vancouver, Canada.
Vancouver, Canada. Oh, I love the exotic international calls.
Yeah, me too.
How are things in Vancouver?
Kind of like Seattle, but metric.
Oh, I see. So the rain is measured in cubic centiliters. I think that's important. Well, welcome to this show, Anthony. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to the proud proprietor of the website, moraca180.com. Mr. Mo Rocca.
Hi, Mo.
Hi, Anthony. Can I borrow some loonies?
They're worth more.
I know.
That's why I want to borrow them.
Also say hello to a deputy editor and a blogger at the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Kiri O'Connor.
Hi, Kiri.
Hi, Anthony. Do they still call it Vansterdam?
Yes.
Okay.
He's going to go with yes. Also say hello to a humorist and an author, most recently, of Long Time Leaving, a Dispatches from Up South, Mr. Roy Blunt, Jr.
Hi, Roy.
Hey, Anthony. I don't know anything about Canada, so I'm not going to ask you one of those Canadian questions as the rest of you.
Come and visit. You can stay with me.
Oh, okay.
You're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle, right now, is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you'll win our prize. Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine.
All right.
Ready to go?
Yes.
Here is your first quote.
It's starting to look like a pee-wee soccer tournament. Everybody gets a trophy.
That was Slate's John Dickerson talking about an ongoing contest where so far there have been three battles with three different winners. What are we talking about?
The Republican primaries.
Exactly right, the GOP primary. The latest player to be told he's a winner for doing his best is Governor Mitt Romney. He won Michigan, a state where his father was governor, and where he promised the people he'd bring $20 billion in subsidies, that he would bring back all the auto manufacturing jobs lost during the last few decades, and that he would spend his fortune to build a dome over the greater Detroit area so that they could grow palm trees in Hamtramck. Great. That's good, and it worked. But the big question is, with three major primaries and three winners, who is going to be the nominee? Given that every leading candidate is hated by a larger constituency than the one that supports him, we anticipate a brokered convention this summer with a nomination finally going to a signed 8x10 photo of Ronald Reagan hanging on a coat rack. Do you guys have any predictions about the GOP race? Nobody else does, do you?
Fred Thompson takes South Carolina, then Rudy Giuliani takes Florida, and then we have to come up with a state for Ron Paul, because I just feel badly for him.
Really?
To make him feel nice.
He could have North Dakota. How about that? Okay. We'll give him North Dakota.
He's hot in Nevada, I hear, Ron Paul.
Yeah, they might go for the AP said he might win Nevada, which would be the greatest thing ever.
Strippers for Ron Paul.
Exactly.
Wow.
I mean, when you say that they're strippers for Ron Paul, they're not stripping for Ron Paul. That I don't think he would go for.
You don't think so?
No. That's not his style. He's a family man.
I actually read a quote in an article where some strippers said that they would like to use his little Ron Paul stickers as pasties.
Oh,
really?
I'm serious.
All right, very good, Anthony. Here's your next quote.
The Bush administration said Monday that it intended to sell 900 Joint Direct Attack munitions to a country that won't even let me go to the hotel gym because I am a woman.
That was ABC's Martha Raddatz. Taking the ironies of the president's foreign policy a little personally, where does the president need to work a little bit harder to spread his, quote, freedom agenda?
Saudi Arabia.
Exactly right. You know how sometimes... Very good. You know how sometimes you're just about to run out the door and then you remember this important thing you forgot to do? Well... Thus it was, with a year left in his term, President Bush went to the Middle East, where he lounged about in fur-lined robes with Saudi princes, appeared with Egyptian president for life, Hosni Mubarak, and basically said, hey, you guys, maybe someday you'd like consider having an election. The result? The Saudi foreign minister was asked if in their meetings they had talked about human rights, and he responded, quote, about what? True fact. Ooh. This is actually a better result than he got with the other topic on the table, high oil prices. President Bush, most powerful man in the world, remember, oil guy, knows these people, said that he would mention his concern about $100 a barrel oil to the Saudi leaders. He'd mention it. Apparently they nodded and made sad faces before everybody in the room broke out into peals of laughter.
And he did that sword dance.
It was weird.
Yeah.
Did he do the sword dance?
Yeah.
I know that he saw the sword dance.
He did it pretty good, actually. So
this is the Saudi Arabian folk
thing. They're side by side.
Thing.
Yeah, arm in arm with swords.
Yeah.
And we know, and he holds hands over there. We've never, have previous presidents done that? I haven't.
Sword danced and held hands?
Held hands.
Apparently also the Saudis gave him as presents fabulous bling.
It's
vast necklaces with encrusted with jewels and rubies.
A barrel of oil around your neck.
Yeah, that's great. It would be worth more. All right, here, Anthony, is your last quote.
You hear about big bass or a big buck in the area, but this is a different deal.
That's a Texas man named Ricky Sorrells. He was talking about something that's got the people in small town Stephenville, Texas, all abuzz. What do 40 residents of that town insist they really saw?
UFO.
Exactly right. 40 residents of Stephenville, including the local constable, insist that last week they saw an enormous object in the sky. One person said it was as much as a mile wide. Another told NPR that it was, quote, bigger than a Walmart, unquote. That being the standard unit of size in West Texas.
And this is an NPR listener, so apparently they really didn't like the UFO.
Yeah, apparently not. They say that this thing, whatever it was, flew very fast and was chased fruitlessly by two fighter jets. The Air Force, naturally, denies those reports. They suggest it was just light reflecting off some airliners, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Now, the residents of Stephenville are basically saying to us, they say, look, we know you think we're just a bunch of the kind of rural hicks who are always reporting UFOs. And we are that. But this time it's real. Carl, how did Anthony do?
Well, our Canadian neighbor, Peter, had three correct answers, so Anthony, you win our prize.
Well done.
Thank you.
Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. And first, it's time for another episode of Wait, Wait, on the Trail.
Yee-hi! I love the twilight out here on the mesa.
Yeah. Thank you, Carl. Kerry?
Yes, sir.
Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama are in Nevada this week. They are fighting for every vote, especially that state's sizable Latino population. Senator Clinton, for example, at an appearance at a Mexican restaurant in Las Vegas, said that the mortgage crisis and the local economic concerns there go together like what?
Beans and rice?
Close. Mm-hmm. She was only on the appetizer phase of the meal.
What would she order for an appetizer? Nachos and cheese.
Ooh. Ooh.
Guacamole
and... You get guacamole?
Chips,
yes. Guacamole and chips is the answer.
Oh, God, that was so hard.
Speaking of the mortgage crisis and local economic concerns, she said, quote, we treat these problems as if one is guacamole and one is chips when they both go together. Deliciously. She didn't say that. She then called universal health care the sweet churro that one day all Americans will enjoy. She then offered voters a chimichanga of Medicare reform, followed by something called her economic enchilada, made by melting the middle-class tax cuts over the top of a stimulus package filled with universal pre-K. Her aides described her plan as a Chi-Chi's fiesta platter for the middle class.
Chimichanga or experience?
You know, I'm not sure this really resonates with Latino voters. It's just a guess on my part.
She's always had a great ethnic touch.
Hasn't she really? Mo, this week Rudy Giuliani was asked about his faltering presidential campaign after coming in sixth in the Michigan primary. He said he wasn't worried, certainly, he said. He wasn't as worried as he was when he faced what challenge?
The application for the annulment? Donna Hanover came down on him hard? I don't know. I'm going to reach here, and I'm going to say 9/11.
Yes. Very good. Asked by a reporter if he was worried about the fact that after the first three major primaries, he has exactly one delegate. Ron Paul has two. America's mayor said, quote, "None of this worries me. September 11th, there were times I was worried," unquote. According to Giuliani, his sixth place finishes are just part of his cunning strategy to lull McCain, Huckabee, and Romney into a sense of safety before Giuliani goes to Florida and triumphantly loses less badly. So one New York Democrat, quote, "Either Rudy is a genius that is about to defy half a century of conventional political wisdom, or he has run the most stupid presidential campaign in history."
Rudy's on a train to nowhere, halfway
down. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Laura Dane in Berkeley, California.
How are things in beautiful Berkeley?
Well, they're a little chilly. I just got back from Puerto Rico, so.
Yeah, I imagine. So you're feeling that horrible chill.
Yes. Well, you know, for me, it's chilly.
I understand. You people get soft. We know.
We are soft.
Well, welcome to the show, Laura. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Laura's topic?
Hydra cookbooks. Jerry Seinfeld's wife is coming over.
Imitation may be the sincerest form of flattery, but highlighting and hitting cut and paste may be going too far. That's plagiarism, baby. This week, we read a great story about somebody claiming another's work as their own. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories of people trying to get credit for somebody else's work. Choose that real story. You'll get Carl Castle's voice on your very own home answering machine.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right, here we go. First, let's hear from Mo Rocca.
When Rod and Sherry Calhoun moved into their dream house in Plano, Texas's pricey Tuscanyville development, they thought they were buying a piece of 16th century Italy. The 32,000 square foot villa, set in the middle of a sprawling quarter acre lot, was advertised as authentic Italian. Quote, "We felt like aristocrats," said Sherry. "The house had everything the royals had, a gift wrapping room, a remote control fireplace, and a six-lane bocce alley. I felt like I was in Florence." But on a trip to a shopping center in neighboring Richardson, they were shocked to find an Olive Garden restaurant that looked exactly like their villa. "When I walked in," said Sherry, "I was frankly disgusted. There were people in tank tops eating in our great room. Some lady was in my powder room cursing into her cell phone. I felt like shouting, 'Class up your act, people. When you're here, you're royal family.'" Mm-hmm. Indeed, it turned out the developer had illegally modeled all of Tuscanyville's homes on Olive Garden, Pizzeria Uno's, and White Castle outlets. Charges are pending.
A mansion in Plano, Texas that turns out to be a ripoff of a chain restaurant. Your next story of purloined material comes from Kerry O'Connor.
Mike Palmetti, a Colorado Republican turned budget-conscious Democrat, had begun a run for Congress using a stump speech noted by many for its wonderful turns of phrase. Alas for Palmetti, one of those people was Phil Johnson, film critic for a local alternative weekly. The speech sounded so familiar, like from the 2005 movie Casanova. Palmetti's, "I was a conservative. My conservatism was my most cherished possession, my gift from God, but it was taken from me," was so close to a line from the movie. If you take out conservative and put in virgin. And then Palmetti's, "A massive amount of spending can lead to confusion. Spending replaced fornication." Palmetti is rethinking the race. "What can I say?" he said. "It's my girlfriend's favorite movie."
A political candidate's campaign is derailed when it's discovered he stole a speech from the movie Casanova. And your last story of false attribution comes from Roy Blunt, Jr.
"Surely few animals are less romantic than the ferret." But no matter how torridly human lovers entwine their loins, afterwards they need a topic of conversation. In the romance novel Shadow Bear by Cassie Edwards, that topic is black-footed ferrets. "They are so named," says Chief Shadow Bear to hot-blooded frontierswoman Shiona Bramlett, after these two have known mutually ravenous passion in his teepee on a bed of pelts, "because of their dark legs." "They are small," responds Shiona, "weighing only about 2 pounds and measuring 2 feet from tip to tail." The lovers, oddly far from coital tone as they go on and on exchanging facts about ferrets, was explained by this week's revelation that the author lifted their pillow talk from an informative but far from bosom-heaving article in Defenders of Wildlife magazine. On romance novel blog sites, readers are saying they feel betrayed. So what do they want, footnotes?
All right, here are your choices. From Mo Rocca, a developer in Texas, is caught stealing his designs from Olive Garden and other chain restaurants. From Kiri O'Connor, a congressional candidate, is caught stealing his speech from the movie, as unlikely as it may be, Casanova. And from Roy Blunt Jr., a romance novelist, is caught lifting swaths of nature copy from a scientific magazine. Which of these is the real story of plagiarism in the news?
I'm going to have to go with the first one, the villa.
The villa that turned out to be an Olive Garden?
Olive Garden, but I'm crossing my fingers.
You're crossing it because you're not certain?
I'm not certain, and I really want Carl Castle on my answering machine.
All right. can you give us some of your thinking? Can you work it out for us?
Of why I think that's the one?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just have a gut feeling.
Your gut feeling. All right, you're
going to
go with
it? That's how we do it in science.
All right. That's. No wonder everything's working out so well for you then. All right.
Yeah, really.
Ferrets have gut feelings.
That's true. I read that in a romance novel. They have gut feelings. All right, then. Your choice is Moe's story of the stolen designs. Well, we are very fortunate, although the person we spoke to for the story is not, because he's the person whose material was stolen.
Oh.
To readers, I would have to imagine they were quite frustrated that these ferrets popped onto the scene. I can only imagine them flipping ahead through the pages looking for the next sex scene.
That was freelance journalist Paul Tolmay, who found his article about black-footed ferrets at the center of a hot plagiarism scandal involving Cassie Edwards' novel Shadow Bear. So I'm sorry, Laura, but as is obvious, you did not choose the right answer. You chose Moe's very convincing story. You have earned a point for Moe, which is great. But you did not win our prize. I'm sorry.
Oh, well.
It's too bad. But thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We ought to have some kind of consolation prize. I hate it.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. She was really nice.
She was really nice, and she really, I know. It's bad.
We'll send her a copy of the novel.
Exactly. Well, that'll make her feel a lot better.
Better than a ferret.
And now the game where we ask accomplished people about things they're too busy to care about. It's called Not My Job. Brad Bird is the Oscar-winning writer and director of the movies The Incredibles and The Iron Giant. His latest movie, Ratatouille, just won a Golden Globe and is favored to win this year's Oscar for Best Animated Picture. Brad Bird, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
Great
to be here.
Great to have you. Let's begin by talking about your movies. You did The Iron Giant, and then you came over to Pixar, and you made The Incredibles. Is it true, in fact, that the villain in The Incredibles, the evil supervillain syndrome, in fact, looks like you?
Yeah, but of course, me being an idiot, I didn't notice this until it was well into production.
Really? You're sitting there because I know the Pixar process
is
very painstaking.
Yeah, I don't think that I look like that, but everybody was sort of snickering behind my back. You know?
They actually slipped this by you. They showed you the mock-ups of the character. You're like,
well,
I don't know. He's kind of homely, isn't it? And they're like,
well,
I have your
thing. My hair doesn't go straight up, you know. But I didn't see it, but everybody was kind of like, you know that's you, don't you? And this is finally, it's way too far into production to pull back from it. And I'm like, oh, man.
And you're actually in the movie, of course, as the voice of Edna, the brilliant costume designer, right?
Yes, darling.
Oh, my God. How did that come to be?
I was cheap and available.
One of the odd things about The Incredibles was that political conservatives latched onto it in a maybe surprising way. Maybe it was surprising to you, maybe not. They pointed out that the reason the superheroes in the plot have to retire is because of lawsuits. Therefore, it's a critique of our over-lawyered society.
And yeah, but at the same time, they were pissed off that the villain made all his money from selling weapons.
Right.
So people, expended a lot of energy trying to figure out whether it was liberal or conservative and finally just gave up. Because it's, I don't think it's that simple. I think the whole red state, blue state thing is sort of a Karl Rove trick,
Mitt Romney thought it was both.
Yeah. And then there was this sort of sense of like this almost Ayn Rand philosophy that people saw in the movie, this idea that there are superheroes amongst us and we must allow them. I have this somewhat Germanic accent when I start going on in this way, and I apologize. But their idea is that the superheroes among us, and we have to let these people, do what they
do.
And we should
I had my little period where I read Ayn Rand, but, I would not classify it that way. I think that while she was an interesting woman, that she kind of lacked a sense of humor.
you think, do you?
Yeah. I kind of get sick of it when they give kids trophies just for showing up for like one game in an entire season.
Oh, right.
And the kid that plays his heart out every game, gets the same trophy. That bugs me.
Right.
I think that it's important to learn that there are times where you're going to lose and just suck it up,
So if you lose today and break somebody's heart.
Speaking of kids.
Yeah, I'm gonna wear my shame, right there for everyone to see.
Now, your latest movie, Ratatouille, came out last year, and like I said, people are expecting it to be at least, shall we say, a leading contender for the Best Animated Picture Oscar. Some people say it's the best movie Pixar ever made, which is saying something. I wanted to ask you about one thing, though, which is that the villain in the movie, this guy voiced by Ian Holm, who's taken over the restaurant, one of the reasons we're supposed to think of him as a villain is because he has dared to take his art in the restaurant and commercialize it by selling products based on it.
Out the very thing by doing things that the chef would never do, corn dogs and
right.
stuff like that.
At the story meetings, and you were talking about this, did anybody ever point out the billions of dollars of Incredibles and Toy Story lunchboxes and such that have been sold in this nation of ours? You don't know about that?
Hey, man, if it's a good product, I don't mind.
Yeah, I know.
I stand by our lunch boxes.
I eat out of one, so
that's fair enough. Right.
Well, Brad Bird, we are delighted to have you with us today, and we have asked you here to play a game we're calling
And I Love You, Dennis J. Kucinich.
Oh, no.
Dennis Kucinich is known for a lot of things.
Oh, no.
His interesting stance in the issues. But what he's proudest of is his remarkable wife, Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Who is 6 inches taller than he is, 31 years younger than he is, and 100 times hotter.
Yeah.
The Washington Post profiled this remarkable power couple, and we're going to ask you 3 questions about this match made in heaven. Answer 2 of the questions right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine, whispering sweet nothings in an upward direction, no doubt. Carl, who is Brad Bird playing for?
Well, he is playing for Heather Kreidinger of Holland, Michigan.
Ready to play?
Okay.
All right.
I'm going to be shame-faced soon, I can tell.
You're going to be wanting that T-ball trophy. Yeah,
exactly. if you screw this up, you get nothing, my friend.
I know.
All right. The former Elizabeth Harper says that she feels she was destined from birth to meet and marry Dennis Kucinich. Which of these does she cite as proof? A, her childhood home in Britain. 4, Dennis's cottages, Dennis's lane. B, her mother says that at the age of 2, she suddenly announced at dinner, quote, I want to live in Cleveland. Or C, as a child, she was always drawn to squirrels and chipmunks, that is, furry creatures much smaller than she.
Oh, my God. Let's say the first one.
You know, for Dennis's cottage, she lived in number 4, Dennis's cottages on Dennis's lane?
Yes.
You're right. That's where she lived. Very good. So on the fateful day that they met in Mr. Kucinich's congressional office in 2005, sparks flew. How did the congressman first try to woo her? A, by giving her his proposed bill to establish a U.S. Department of Peace. B, by giving her a Buddhist mandala drawn on his congressional letterhead. Or C, by plying her with his homemade vegan tofu samosas.
I'll say the middle one.
You're going to go with the Buddhist mandala drawn freehand on the congressional letterhead?
Yeah.
Sounds good, but no, it was in fact his proposal for the Department of Peace.
Dang.
She says she went outside, read the paper, and was blown away. She says, quote, I didn't expect the bill should actually be so conscious.
Wow.
Yeah.
Seems how so many bills are unconscious.
Yeah, I know.
I thought that when she kissed him, he'd turn into a prince.
He's been trying for a couple years now. All right, now this is exciting because, you know, as you guys
now
say,
the pressure's on.
You come down to the third act. It's all down to here. This last question, the couple is so incongruous that people don't quite believe that they are husband and wife, as was evidenced by what incident? A, the time that the congressman was asked, and is this your nurse? B, the time a guy came up, told Elizabeth how beautiful she was, and asked her out while she was eating dinner with Kucinich. Or C, the time in Cleveland when a guy complimented Kucinich on how beautiful his date was, leaned in, and quietly asked about her hourly rate.
Ooh. Oh, that's terrible.
Isn't it, though?
Mm. Yeah.
I'm going to say B.
You're going to say B, the time that somebody asked her out while she was sitting there having dinner with her husband?
Uh-huh.
You're right!
Hey.
Very good! This guy walks by the restaurant, looks into the window, sees her in a table next to the window, comes inside, goes up to her, says, quote, excuse me, I've never done this before, but you're the most incredibly beautiful woman I've ever seen in my life. What are you doing for dinner?
and she says, the guy the bill?
No, she says, well, excuse me, but I'm having it right now with my husband.
He said, where? I don't see
him. That's him.
Kucinich is a pretty big tent kind of guy.
Yeah.
He's very liberal.
I don't think he's that liberal. Carl, how did filmmaker Brad Bird do on our quiz?
Brad did well enough, Peter. He had 2 correct answers, so Brad wins our prize for Heather Kreidinger.
Well done. Well done. And you really earned that, so it counts.
Yeah, it was bloody.
It was. Brad Bird is an award-winning animator and director. He wrote and directed The Incredibles, The Iron Giant, and his latest film, now out on DVD, is Ratatouille. Brad Bird, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks
for the movie.
Blast.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
In just a minute, the news in rhyming verse. It's our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call. The number 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, though, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Roy, we know times are tough for the financial big shots in New York City, with many of them facing both unemployment and multi-million dollar mortgages. Well, according to the website dealbreaker.com, there's an event in New York that gives some of them an opportunity to get their financial mojo back. What?
Get their financial mojo back. Can you give me a hint?
Well, call it like, imagine 60 seconds with Leona Helmsley, 60 seconds with Georgette Mosbacher, and you work your way down the table.
It's a little gathering of people who each get a minute to talk.
Sort of like that.
Yeah.
Wait, is that like speed dating?
It is.
Oh, I see.
It's speed dating for rich women and hot young men. Are you a loaded lady or a hot guy in need of a loaded lady? Of course you are. You're a public radio listener.
Hasn't Leona Helmsley passed away?
Yes, she has, year? But...
But,
frankly, I think that makes her more attractive. In her case.
She improved with death. That's horrible. Death becomes her. That's
it
awful.
Really does.
Took some of the edges off of her.
It's a speed dating service. It's called Pocket Change NYC. It promises to hook up male wannabe Anna Nicole Smiths with sugar mamas who have either $4 million or liquid assets or a $4 million divorce settlement or the last name Winfrey.
Bay, I say Bay.
Did you hear about this? This is supposedly a new sort of sociological trend of older, wealthy women picking up young, hot guys.
I was not invited.
Candy. You weren't strange? I can't imagine why. They must have misplaced your address. Well, but these women are called cougars.
Cougars.
Oh, yeah. Cougars and bears.
Sure.
Yeah. Martha Ray did it. Joan Collins is a cougar.
Why are the women... Older women who think that their money will get them younger, attractive sex objects are called cougars, while men who do the same thing are
called
just called...
Republicans.
They're just called men, actually, in my view.
Yes. No.
Cougar's a kind of cool animal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, a cougar's not bad. I mean, a cougar stalks you don't stalk the cougar.
Right.
So it's empowering.
Yeah. That's true. All right, we'll go
with that. Not like they're called prairie dogs.
Right. Black-footed ferrets.
Yes. Cougar, it's cool.
Kiri, a 14-year-old boy in the city of Łódź in Poland is in trouble, and all he did was invent a clever way of operating his train set with a remote control. The problem was the train set he was controlling. What was it?
The National Railroad?
Close. It was the Łódź Public Transit System. Authorities say that Adam Dabrowski, 14, a, quote, electronics genius, studied the Łódź trolley system, built himself a, quote, TV-style remote control, hacked into the control network, and started moving trolleys around. Various crashes and mishaps occurred, leading to some injuries, nothing serious, thank goodness. The kid has been confined to a minimum security computerized jail operated by perfectly harmless robots, which authorities are confident that no one could ever sabotage.
This is Łódź?
Łódź. It looks like Lods. You'd say Lods, but you pronounce it Łódź.
Łódź, oh.
Łódź.
See, I didn't know.
Yeah.
Well, I learned something here today.
Yeah. The Polish Film Institute is in Łódź.
Oh.
I just knew that.
All right.
Well, I mean, it's not funny. It's just kind of interesting.
Well, don't try to take a trolley there.
Let me have to say, no one got to work at the Film Institute last Wednesday, let me tell you.
I've been working on the railroad all the live long day.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call to leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago. And you can download the Wait Wait podcast for your computer or MP3 player. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Ellie in Colorado.
Where in Colorado, Ellie, are you calling from?
Lyman, Colorado. It's about 80 miles east of Denver.
So you're out there in the plains?
The eastern plains, yes.
Right. That's sort of the Colorado that's proudly not, like, into mountains or much else at all, actually.
We call it the best of Kansas, the worst of Colorado.
That's neat. Kansarado. That's cool.
What exactly is the worst of Colorado?
Some people think it's the Eastern Plains, but...
I understand.
And what's the best of Kansas?
Actually, Kansas is beautiful, too, but the Eastern Plains has grown on me.
Ellie, welcome to the show. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with a last word or phrase missing from each of them. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on just two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Ready to play?
I am.
All right, here's your first limerick.
The circus is coming to town. We're not going, so kids, just calm down. Red nose, face of white, it gives you a fright. We know that you're scared of the...
clown.
Right, very good. Bad news, bozo. A new study from the University of Sheffield has confirmed what we've always known deep down to be true. Children hate clowns. The study of more than 250 children aged 4 to 16 suggests that sending clowns into children's hospital wards is like treating their illnesses on the seventh circle of hell. Researcher Dr. Penny Curtis said, quote, "We found that clowns are universally disliked by children. Some found them quite frightening and unknowable," unquote. The clown community was horrified by this news. The Ringling Brothers Clown College immediately brought in dozens of clowns to cheer up their students. The result, all the carnations in the students' vests drooped even further. All right, very good. Here's your next limerick.
"To be honest is something I try, yet my number of falsehoods is high. 90,000 per life, more than half to my wife. Yes, that is how often I
lie."
Right. According to a survey by British drinks firm WKD, the average person lies 88,000 times over the course of their lifetime, or 1,460 lies a year. Men lied more than women, duh, with 5 lies a day as opposed to 3. The most popular lie, "Nothing's wrong, I'm fine," followed closely by, "Nice to see you. I haven't got any cash on me. I'll give you a ring or phone call. Sorry, I missed your call, and we'll have to meet up soon." Strangely, "Sure, I'm going to vote for Barack Obama in the New Hampshire primary" didn't make the list. The firm says that the top 20 fibs were all just little white lies, so there's nothing to worry about, really. Although we do need to point out that "there's nothing to worry about, really" sounds suspiciously like the other lies on the list.
I talked to a man once who was complaining about marriage counseling.
Yeah.
He said, "It's easy for her. She doesn't have to lie."
Been in counseling, Curie?
Moi?
Here's your last limerick.
"Don't whine, boy. Repeat that remark. Oh, you want to go to the park. And what should I pack? Leash, frisbee, and snack? I'm glad I can translate your..."
Oh, can I hear it one more time?
Sure you can.
Thanks.
"Don't whine, boy. Repeat that remark. Oh, you want to go to the park. And what should I pack? Leash, frisbee, and snack? I'm glad I can translate your..."
Bark.
Right! So do you ever lay awake at night wishing you knew what the heck the dog next door was barking about? Well, now, thanks to a team of Hungarian scientists, a computer program might be able to tell you. The scientists recorded 14 sheepdogs barking in 6 situations, playing, fighting others, fed the barks into the computer, and then used software to study the different tones. The computer was able to identify the dog's situation 43% of the time and which dog was barking 52% of the time, which is far better than humans are able to do. The scientists were thrilled, but a spokesdog for the dog community said the program was inadequate. Quote, "This is a crude device that will never be able to comprehend the subtleties and nuances of canine meaning," which the computer translated as, "Throw the stick, throw the stick." Carl, how did Ellie do in our quiz?
Very well, Peter. Ellie, you had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done, Ellie. Congratulations. Congratulations, and thanks for playing our game.
Thank you so much. It was fun.
It was. Thank you, Bob. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players now has 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Kerry O'Connor and Mo Rocca are tied for first place, Peter. Each has 3 points. Roy Blunt Jr. has 2.
All right. So, Roy, you are going to begin. Fill in the blank. Former Congressman Mark Silgender was indicted on charges that he had worked for a group that sent money to blank.
Terrorists.
Right. The FDA announced that over-the-counter blanks should not be given to children under 2.
Cough medicines.
Right. Officials in Minneapolis said that a design flaw was the cause of a fatal blank last year.
Bridge collapse.
Right. The Commerce Department reported that the construction of new blanks dropped to its lowest level in 16 years.
Houses.
Right. The New York Post mistakenly said that if openly gay North Carolina Senate candidate Jim Neal wins his election, former Senator Jesse Helms will blank.
plots.
No spin in his grave.
Oh, right.
Holmes, of course, is still with us. Scientists in South America discovered the fossilized remains of a blank that weighed 1 ton and was the size of a small car.
A rodent.
Exactly, a rat. Media mogul Blank announced her newest project, a 24-hour TV network named OWN, O-W-N, after her initials.
Oprah.
Oprah Winfrey, Oprah Winfrey Network. A judge in Canada acquitted a drunk driving suspect who convinced the judge he couldn't have been driving under the influence because he's blank.
He's blind.
No, he's too cheap to buy a sufficient amount of booze. Thomas Wood admitted to having a pint and a glass of beer over a 2.5-hour period, but he said there's no way he would shell out the big bucks for 4 drinks. And since an expert testified that it would have taken 4 drinks for Wood to be over the blood alcohol limit, the judge acquitted him. Carl, how did Roy do on our quiz?
Roy had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 14 points, and Roy has the lead.
All right.
I thought Plotz was Yiddish for turnover in his grave.
No, Plotz is Yiddish for... For getting off a blunged and just, you know. Anyway. All right. We have flipped a coin. Kiri has elected to go second. So here you go, Kiri. Fill in the blank. Appearing before a congressional committee, baseball commissioner Bud Selig took responsibility for the problem of blanks in baseball.
Steroids.
Right. Stocks slipped after Blank told Congress that he supports plans for a stimulus package to help the economy.
Ben Bernanke.
Right. Amazingly, only a few people were injured Thursday when a British Airways jet crash-landed short of the runway at Blank Airport.
Heathrow.
Right. An hour before the Democratic debate in Nevada, the state Supreme Court ruled that NBC did not have to include presidential candidate Blank.
Dennis Kucinich.
Right. But he still has Elizabeth. After they got a call about an armed man in the restroom, police in Canada descended on Edmonton City Hall only to find Blank.
A moose in the restroom.
No, a man with a gun-shaped belt buckle. Oh. Richard Nair, hula hoop inventor and founder of the Blank Toy Company, died at age 82.
Whammo.
Right. NBC lost approximately $10 to $15 million in advertising dollars because of the bare bones announcement of this year's blank winners.
Golden Globes.
Right. A Milwaukee judge accused a prosecutor of near contemptuous behavior because the prosecutor blanked.
Fell asleep.
No. Wore an ascot instead of a tie to court.
Oh, goodness.
Judge William Sosne had warned Assistant District Attorney Warren Zier before. So when Zier arrived in court wearing the red ascot and matching pocket square, Sosne had it. He said, quote, "This is not about the definition of an ascot or a necktie. This is an issue which I believe deals with the integrity of the court."
Should have worn a dickie.
Yeah. Carl, how did Kiri do?
Kiri had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 15 points, and Kiri has the lead.
All right, then. How many questions correct does Mo need to win?
6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
Oh, my gosh. Here we go, Mo. Ready? Yeah. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. This week, the FDA approved the sale of meat from blanked animals.
Animals with mad cow disease.
No. Cloned animals. This week, both Citigroup and famously bullish investment firm Blank posted the worst losses in their histories.
Merrill Lynch.
Right. A judge in Nevada said Democrats could conduct primary voting in the Blanks of Las Vegas.
Casinos.
Right. A video appeared in the internet in which Blank says that he and his fellow Scientologists are, quote, authorities of the mind.
Tom Cruise.
Yes. In Alberta, Canada, a good Samaritan who got his car stolen when he stopped to help a stranded driver said in the future he wouldn't stop even if Blank...
Mother Teresa was thumbing a ride.
No, even if, quote, there was a blonde, half-naked chick running away from a guy with a chainsaw, unquote. With the headline, 930,180 minutes, the New York Times measured the amount of time Blank ran on Broadway before closing.
Rent.
Right. A day after a Nevada judge doubled his bail for breaking the original terms of his release from jail, Blank returned home to Florida.
Blank returned home to Florida.
Yes.
O.J. Simpson.
O.J. Simpson, yes. Officials at Amsterdam Airport did not believe the man dressed as a priest who said that the 3 kilos of cocaine on his person were actually Blank.
The ashes of Christ?
No. That would be a find. Holy sand.
Okay.
The man who claims to run a Bolivian monastery refused to be searched on religious grounds. I didn't know you could do that, but police searched him anyway. Apparently you can't. And they discovered the 3 kilos of coke strapped to his legs under his vestments. Oh, that, he said? That's just Holy Sand. Police quickly determined that the street name for Holy Sand was cocaine and said that the man's arrest has made them think twice about the holy Tic Tacs and holy parsley they've seen lately. Carl, did Mo do well enough to win?
He needed at least 6 correct answers to tie, but Mo had just 5
oh,
correct
my
answers.
Goodness.
So with 15 points, Kerry O'Connor is this week's champion.
Hey, well done. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict what that Texas UFO really was. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Kauffman, the Foundation of Entrepreneurship, celebrating entrepreneurs who start businesses and change the world on the web at kauffman.org. The Annenberg Foundation, advancing public well-being through improved communication on the web at annenbergfoundation.org. And the members of the National Association of Realtors, working on behalf of America's residential and commercial property owners on the web at realtor.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. We welcome this week our new intern, Joanna Feldman. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Our technical director is Robert Newhouse. Other engineers include Lorna White, Bob Weston, Lester Larchick, and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank, B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer and produced by Mike Danforth and Emily Ecton. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Rod Abeed. Now, panel, what was that UFO that people in Texas saw? What are we going to find out is the truth? Kerry O'Connor.
It was the spirit of Tom Landry coming down to smack the stupid cowboys upside the head.
Mo Rocca.
Tom Cruise's teeth? I don't know. I just can't. No, he's got big choppers.
He does. And Roy Blunt Jr.
It's something that's still not completely worked out yet. It's sort of amorphous. That's why it looks like UFO. But we've been hearing about it all week. It's what's going to save us all from financial ruin. It sounds like the sort of thing that you're offered for sale in unwanted emails. But it is what they're calling the stimulus package.
Well, if the UFO turns out to be any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carol Castle. Thanks also to Mo Rocca, Roy Blunt Jr., and Kerry O'Connor. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Rock, jazz, urban, classical, world, folk. Discover old and new favorites in a variety of genres at NPR's music website. That's at npr.org/music. Upon a broken guitar.